Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at Sterling Country Club for the occasional invitational. Here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be lined with a death wish.
Sterling Country Club for the occasional invitational. And AJ, I relayed a story to you that came across my timeline during the break. We can start with that story for hour two, or I can go to talking about NBA tanking. Which one do you want to do?
Hey, it's your show. It's up to you. Either way.
See, you gotta be an active voice. Like, you don't know, you've never heard of the artist I'm about to discuss or could discuss in a later segment. So make a choice. Do you want to hear up or talk about this in a little bit, or do you want to do it now?
I guess gonna get out of the way.
All right, let's get it out of the way. A lot of people may not know, man, this audience might, but there was a band called Jamiroquai. I thought it was a person for a lot of my life, but it turns out that's a band. JK is the lead singer of said band, and can you play their only hit, at least the only one I know of, AJ? If you remember the video, I'll talk over it, at least as it comes on. If you remember this video or the song Virtual Insanity, Jamiroquai, the guy, the lead singer, had that weird hat, and he was dancing around, and it was a very 2000s era video as far as the set. But he's just dancing by himself, wearing that, at this point, ridiculous hat, and it's the one Jamiroquai song I've ever heard of. Well, he relayed a story that I'm not sure I would have told. He told a story about, look, you get to date young Winona Ryder if you are the lead singer of Jamiroquai. Kudos to you. But at some point, you should just leave it at, hey, I got to date Winona Ryder. You don't tell the story that you had to leave Winona Ryder because she wanted sex too much and her breasts were too big. You don't tell people that story. You keep that to yourself. What are you doing? Like, he is quoted as saying, they were enormous, bigger than they look on film. And she had this habit of, he uses a phrase I'm not going to use. She had this habit of constantly wanting to have sex. It was exhausting. Hey, bro. Look, he's been out of the news probably since this song came out for me. But sometimes you don't have to say everything. You could just be known as a man who got to date Winona Ryder. And that's, for what it's worth, something you can be applauded for. But then you have to... years later, and Winona Ryder's probably like, what are we doing, man? This has been 20 years. Why are you talking about me? But 20-plus years later, you got to let everyone know, look, man, she was exhausting. All she wanted to do was have sex. And I had to end it. Nah. That's a story we keep to ourselves, JK. And the name is funny, too. He was exhausted. You take the win. And instead... maybe it's just because you're a lead singer and women are something that are... it happens to be that women are like lead singers, and you have... I don't want to put it this way, but you have your pick. And you can have a conversation about Winona Ryder in that way. But for me, not a lead singer of a band, even if it is Jamiroquai, that's one I keep in the tuck. I say I love... she was a great girl. We had a great time. I was happy to be with her. I don't tell people I begged out because... her sex drive was higher than mine. He goes, another quote from him is, waiter, my steak is too juicy and delicious. Do something about it. Or at least, oh, that's the comments from people who can't believe this is what the story is telling. I mean, he's not exactly the lead singer of a cool band. You would allow, like, Gavin Rosdale, who I don't think he's not still with Gwen Stefani, but he was at one point. Like, those guys, you're like, okay. But if you're the lead singer of Jamiroquai, you be silent when it comes to stories like this. But he told it, and now everyone knows that that's the reason, or at least one of the reasons, they're not together. Sorry. I'm going to side with Winona Ryder here. God forbid she wanted to have more sex with this guy. All right. That was a quick one. Now we can get to something less fun. And more complicated even than a guy losing out on Winona Ryder because her sex drive was higher. Tanking in the NBA. It is something they've had a problem with. They've had to find or have tried to find ways to get it under control. They flatten the odds. That's why we are at this 14%. Even if you are the worst team in basketball, you don't have the greatest chance of winding up with the number one overall pick. That's why we see the teams jump up and take it. They've been trying to find ways to keep people from actively losing games. And the newest way, it's gaining momentum, it looks like it'll be finalized, is to limit the odds even further of a team with the worst record winning the lottery. As it stands now, it's called the 3-2-1 lottery proposal. And the lottery would expand to 16 teams. It would involve the 8 seed. So you could make, like the Magic this year. They were in the 7-8 game in the play-in. If they wanted to play the game, they could, and by the game I mean trying to stay in the lottery, they could lose the 7-8 game on purpose and then go win the 8-9 game or 8-10 game, depending who came out of that 9-10 matchup, and then still make the playoffs, still have a chance at the lottery. At some point, Adam Silver can't, and whoever decided to come up with this, can't come up with every scenario to think about if a team's going to try to lose. You at some point have to hope that your members, and by members I mean the teams, decide, hey, winning matters to us. We're not going to always try to lose games for the hope of getting a top pick. Matt Moore, his Twitter handle is HP Basketball. He did a study on this, and the odds of you winding up with a top pick and that top pick becoming an all-star or all-NBA player with the team that drafted that player, far lower than you think. These guys go on to become stars. They just don't do it with the team that drafted them. So this willingness to tank your seasons and multiple seasons to try to be in a spot to take some 18, 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid to save your franchise, it doesn't work as often as you think. Now, Wimby is a prime example of it working. That's a hit for the Spurs, as bad as they were. And they worked it. They got it right. That's the true generational prospect that changed the franchise. You want to say the Pistons have certainly made it work. They've made other shrewd acquisitions. They made some veteran trades. But Cade Cunningham is the fulcrum for them, and they've made it work. But those are the number one picks overall. You start to look at some of the picks that are lower than that in these drafts, not worked. Like, for example, we talked about them. AJ, I'll ask you. And Art, who we were talking about Jabari earlier, he tweeted us and said Jabari can hoop. AJ, do you think Jabari Smith ever makes an all-star game or an all-NBA team with the Rockets?
Probably not.
We know Jalen Green won't. And the question is, will Reed Shepard? Maybe Amen is the one. He's already doing the all-defensive teams. He is the most likely guy of all of them to do it, to make an all-NBA team with them or make an all-star team with them. So we're talking about, what are we talking about? 4 top 5 picks in the draft, and one of the 4 may reach a criteria of an all-star appearance with you or an all-NBA with you. I mean, Reed Shepard still has a chance, but, I mean, he's a smallish guard who can't defend and really isn't a point guard. So good luck with his potential all-NBA status. So this is the thing. All these teams are trying to get to a point where they can have a shot at a superstar. And even the Rockets, who are winning 50-plus games a year, are not reaching the ultimate goal of having the franchise changer be a pick that you make in the top 5. Their best player, well, I've already made the argument that Amen's their best player, but their most accomplished player is Alperen Şengün, a guy who was not a lottery pick. So the NBA has decided to try to de-incentivize teams from trying to be bad. So as I said, the 7-8 loser will be in the lottery even if they make the playoff. It's the 3-2-1 is in reference to lottery balls per team. So teams with the bottom 3 record, which is being called the relegation area, would only have 2 lottery balls, but they can fall no further than the 12th pick. And the rest of the 13 lottery teams could fall as far as the 16th pick in the new expanded lottery, but have more opportunities to get a top 4 player. So this year, you look at it, the Suns were the 8th seed. They make the playoffs, and they own their pick. They would have a chance to still be in line to take a Peterson or Boozer or DeBanza, even though they made the playoffs. A team like the Jazz, if they're one of the bottom three teams, they would still get their chance, but it would be a lesser chance than the Suns, who competed and made the playoffs. This is their chance, or at least this is what they're trying to do, to force teams to actually put on a good product. Because as much as the draft is an event, the season is what they care about, and then the playoffs. And if the totality of your year is dealing with, let's say, 8 to 10 teams who stopped trying or didn't even start, it's bad for the product. Will it work? We'll see. I mean, I'm sure teams will try their best to circumvent it by still being bad, not really trying, but staying between one of the non-playoff teams, but not the worst team. It'll be a needle they're trying to thread to be bad, but not bad enough to lose the opportunity at a lottery ball. So that's the convoluted way the NBA is responding to the complaints and their teams not taking the spirit of competition seriously. And the Rockets are certainly part of it, but they're done with that. And now they're certainly trying to win games, and they got a game 5 tonight. All right, we'll go to break with that. When we come back, we'll talk some Astros, because they do lose to the Orioles, back on the road, back to losing. And I don't know that anyone has been worse this season for the Astros as far as guys who have stayed healthy than Ryan Weiss. We'll talk a little Astros baseball when we come back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at Sterling Country Club for the occasional invitational. Here's Del Olalea.
So the Astros lose to the Orioles in Baltimore last night. They lose 5-3. Heiwei Tang was the opener. He gave up 2 runs in 3 innings, but at this point, my expectation for Astros starters, even if they are just a guy who is just trying to get a couple innings on the books as they work their way through a bullpen game, are low. You know what? That's fine from Heiwei Tang. He went 3. He only gave up 2. They're fully in the game at that point when he exits, and you think, you know what? All right. Not the best, but we still have a shot to win with this lineup. The lineup only scores 3 runs. They do get 11 hits, so they stranded. They left 10 on, and weren't great with runners in scoring position. Altuve and Correa, Paredes, Walker, Diaz, all hitless with runners in scoring position. Bryce Matthews had a pretty good day. But you lose 5-3. But the attention needs to get paid to Ryan Weiss. Right or wrong, he was one of the guys people focused on in the offseason. He had an interesting story. He was coming back to the U.S. from overseas. People liked the stuff. I think he had a good spring training. It was right in line with the expectations that the pitching would be good, and the hitting had all the question marks despite the established names because of how they did in the spring. Now, Jeff Blum joined the show right before, I think it was day of, opening day, and talked about how where the Astros play their spring training is a place that is not great for hitters. And just wait till they get back to Daikin and other major league ballparks. And he was right. The Astros' offense, it's tailed off a little bit, but it's still, we know, it has been one of the better offenses in baseball, led by Yordan Alvarez, while the pitching has completely let them down, from injuries to just lack of performance. And Ryan Weiss is firmly in the category of lack of performance. He has been bad, and bad's being kind. He's been atrocious. And it continued last night. He did go 3 2/3, but gave up 3 earned runs. You start to look at some of his stat lines in terms of appearances and runs given up. I'm just looking at his last five, and he hasn't given up less than two runs in any of these outings, not going more than 3 2/3 in any of them. That's his last five appearances dating back to April 6th against the Colorado Rockies. He's been a guy they've had to count on mostly because he can actually go out there when called upon, but the results haven't been good. I asked the guys this morning, can you think of a guy who's performed worse in his first year with the Astros as an after being acquired? Like, Montero has a reputation of not living up to the deal he got, but when he got here, he was good. It led to the overpay during that little era where there was no GM and Jeff Bagwell and others were making decisions. It led to Montero's deal. It's why the Jose Abreu deal happened, people feel like, and those were disasters. Ryan Weiss and the Astros, well, the Astros particularly don't have the excuse of, hey, we didn't really have a GM. You're established GM. He may not be your established GM for long, but the guy who's officially the GM made the move, and it has been terrible. Dana Brown earlier this week talked about, in response to a question about Joe Espada, saying he backed Joe. Pitchers have been injured. This is not on Joe. I did find it interesting that a guy who's on his own hot seat would be giving a stamp of approval to another guy who people want to put on the hot seat. While Dana Brown may be one to go to, I would agree that overall, well, you can certainly pick at some of Joe Espada's things as far as his management of the pitching staff and the bullpen, considering all the problems they've had. This is a roster construction problem. The pitching, healthy or not, has been bad. Look, Lance McCullers is fully in your rotation only because he can actually go out there and pitch. Their performances outside of, what, game one, the first one, that was certainly heartwarming, it's been nothing close to that since. That's why you have Peter Lambert going tonight. They're finding guys off the scrap heap, and Peter Lambert had a great start in his last one. You hope that continues. And at this point, when we talk about the Astros, we're finding small things, if you want to pay attention to them, to be excited about. Can Peter Lambert, a guy most of us have never heard of up until this point, former Rocky in 2024, was out of Major League Baseball last year, another guy coming over from overseas to pitch. I think he was in maybe the Japanese League. I believe that was where he was. He's gone tonight, and you hope that he can somewhat replicate his quality start, just because it'd be nice not to have to deal with another Astros loss. It is at this point waiting for Spencer Arrighetti's turn, because as it stands now, until Hunter Brown comes back, the only pitcher you can see being a part of this Astros team going forward, I mean, I won't say you're stuck with Mike Burrows, but he's the other one, and he's been below average. But the one who's shown any promise that you think can be around for years to come is Spencer Arrighetti. And I was having this talk with the guys, and now I'm thinking about it myself as far as this show is concerned. We're getting ever closer to the summer, and if the Rocket season ends today, that's one less topic to harp on as we go forward. AJ, we got a real shot to be a World Cup show. If the Astros the Astros keep this up, we got a real chance to be, hey, did you see what happened in Group D yesterday? Certainly this show will talk about the U.S. team, but we may have to pick a team from each group to focus on, because the U.S. won't be playing every day. We can't talk about them every day, and hell, if they get knocked out early, then we will talk about them the day after to crush them, but after that it'll be over. So beyond the enjoyment of going home and watching a good baseball team play, just for my own benefit, I need Hunter Brown back, because at least I know they got a chance to win, and I need Arrighetti to pick it up. And then if you get a third guy, then you've got a real shot to turn this around. But at this point, it's Arrighetti or bust, and maybe Lambert's your next best choice or option for a potential win when it comes to the Astros, if their offense isn't going to score nine runs, because when you watch the staff, if they're not putting on six or seven, you can probably pack it up for the day or night. 11-19, the Astros. The division is full of teams who are not great. The Athletics, only a game above 500 and lead the division, with Seattle behind them. So if we had hope that this team had a turnaround in them, the division is for the taking. It's just that while it's only been 30 games, it doesn't feel like, when you talk about this staff, that this is simply a slow start to the season. These performances feel like they're going to be the norm throughout, unless Hunter Brown comes back in a reasonable amount of time and you find a third guy and Arrigetti keeps it up. So that's where we are, 30 games in, 4.5 out, and every time Ryan Weiss goes out there, you can expect the same result. A poor pitching performance and maybe the difference between winning and losing. Because you start to look at some of his outings as I go through it once again. The last six, the Astros scored 7, 6, 2, 5, and 3. And you start to look at the difference. It is the Ryan Weiss performance, for the most part, that has sealed the Astros' fate. But the arm's still working, so he's going to go out there and get his turn. All right, we'll go to break with that. Astros tonight against the Orioles. Peter Lambert on the mound. See if the Astros can take game two of that series. We'll go to break with that. We'll talk some NBA. We didn't get into the games themselves. As the Celtics lose, which is, it warms my heart. I'm not a Sixer fan, but if the Celtics are going to drop one, I'll take that. And Knicks took care of the Hawks and the Spurs. Took care of the Blazers. So we'll get to some NBA stuff when we come back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at Sterling Country Club for the occasional invitational. Here's Del Olalea.
So we had the Spurs close out the Blazers last night. Of all the series in the first round, the two that are done with are the two teams in the West that the Rockets, unfortunately, are going to have to deal with for the next half decade, at a minimum. As long as Wimby's a Spur, they are going to be a team to contend with. But the Thunder, that said, the same thing can be said about the Thunder. The reason I use half a decade is because, as opposed to the next 10 years or something, is because I don't believe NBA windows are going to be that long going forward, just because of the financial constraints the CBA places on teams that you have to make moves. But if Shea and Wimby are there, those are at a minimum going to be teams who are top four in the West. Whether they will be the juggernauts they seem to be right now, that's up for debate. The Spurs are in a good spot, though. Their current backcourt beyond De'Aaron Fox is full of guys on rookie deals and not even really in line for the rookie maxes as of yet. They still got a couple years for those guys with Dylan Harper and Stephon Castle. And we know Wimby's going to get all the money he wants, but they take down the Blazers, and they did it in a way that showed that they are someone to be dealt with. And once they got that game three, you thought there was an opening for maybe a long series, and with the long series, you open yourself up for injuries. It is just surviving in the playoffs now. It's surviving the attrition that comes with these long playoff series and these long playoff runs. And the Spurs did themselves a great favor winning game three without Wimby, and they were able to take apart the Blazers over the last couple games, and it hasn't even been close. They had a big second half in game four, and then in game five, it was never really a contest. The only time the Blazers had any chance is the minutes that Wimby missed in game one, or was it game two? Game two, and then that game three when he wasn't available, and they got off to a good start, but wasn't enough. And I mentioned before we went to break, I think, the Sixers and the Celtics, and the Celtics are a pretty simple team. It's threes, and if they go down, the volume they shoot them at, and then you throw in the obvious offensive talent of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, they're going to win the game. And if their shooting goes cold, you got a real shot to win. And with Joel Embiid healthy and active, and once he stops shooting so many threes early, you can see his impact. And the Sixers are going to be one of those what-if franchises that if only their best player could stay on the floor, what could they be? This stretches back to what was his name was Brown. I forgot his first name in Philly, the coach at that point. point. And of course, Nick Nurse is a part of it. Doc Rivers as well. They've had these guys and they've had these teams with Joel Embiid, and it's always come down to can their guy who's never made it past the second round of the playoffs be healthy through a 7-game series? And I won't say cursed because it is what it is, but that hasn't been the case. But you see the glimpses if you're watching the game last night of him controlling that game against two superstars. And once the Sixers got a hold of the Celtics and maybe not force the Celtics to shoot bad shots, just simply the Celtics are going to play one way. And it's one of the reasons why they weren't a very appealing watch when they won the title. They play math. And if their math is right, they're going to win. They play the math game. And if it goes well, they're going to win. And if they don't, you get a night where they only score 97 points because they shoot under 30% from three. They only make 11. That's the Celtics aren't going to win any game against a good basketball team when they do that. It's just not the way they're built. And it is funny sometimes when I watch people and they talk about, or at least I look at tweets and posts and it's the comp between how Ime Udoka couldn't get the best out of Reed Sheppard, and he didn't get the best out of Peyton Pritchard. Meanwhile, people love to ignore that Peyton Pritchard only had the 1 year and was a young basketball player. And then you look at him now, three plus years now with Joe Mazzulla. He's 28 years old. So if you're seeing Peyton Pritchard play at the level he's playing at and wonder why Ime couldn't get that out of him, he was 24 years old when Ime coached him. He's 28 years old now. It is a natural progression for a maybe second round pick who's undersized and was playing behind all these other primary ball handlers. It takes some time to find his way. Now Reed Sheppard is a top five pick, but what is Reed Sheppard going to be at 28? Look, we have our problems with Ime Udoka and what he does as a coach, but I don't think that particular comp should be one people use when we're talking about two players at very different stages of their career. And sure, maybe you say Missoula system maximizes what Peyton Pritchard can be. I don't believe that Peyton Pritchard's the same guy at 22 years old as far as what he would accomplish on the court, even with Joe Mazzulla, if it was 6 years ago, compared to what he is now. I mean, development, not linear, and Reed Sheppard had his moments, and he's also had ones where you understand sometimes why he's not on the floor, but I think because of the heightened expectations, we want it all to happen at once from the coach to the players, and look, I think it's unlikely that the coach gets as much time as we suspected he would have gotten if this goes the way it feels like it's going to go against the Lakers in this series. I'm not saying he gets fired after the series, but this is one more reason why a departure could be accelerated, because now you're talking about no playoff series wins in your first 3 years. And this one would be one that isn't as embarrassing as the Warriors one, but you were the 2 seed and didn't get that done. And this time around, you are the more talented team due to the Lakers' injuries. And particularly if you get knocked out in five, like if you fight back, they will get a lot of credit even if they don't win the series, if this extends to 6 or 7. But if it goes down tonight where you get the gentleman sweep, it'll be a loud offseason. And the Rockets may be able to push back against the noise, but it's the noise ain't going to stop going into next year unless there's some major acquisition, which is something people think might occur. So the other game was Knicks-Hawks. It wasn't competitive. Karl-Anthony Towns got out to a good start. It was 35-22 at the end of one. That series seems to be going the way that you expected. The Hawks were a little spicy early, and they got Game 3 at home. But once the Knicks stabilized in Game 4, they have seemed to found the answers. And it looks like it's going to be a Knicks. I think they take this one in 6. We'll see what the Hawks have. But Jalen Brunson had a great night as well. And their two best players played really well. And when those two do that, Anthony Towns didn't really do a lot late, but once he got going early, it set the tone for them, and Jalen Brunson scores almost 40. And the Hawks are looking like they're going to go down as a nice story. It was a nice run, CJ McCollum had his moments, but you don't become full-on villain for Knicks fans until you at least get them to a Game 7. So we'll see if he's capable of that. He was not good last night. He only scored 6 points. So it was not a compelling night in the NBA last night. You had blowouts all around. The only real surprise was what the Sixers did to the Celtics. So Daryl Morey's team's still alive, and they've got a Game 6 at home, something the Rockets are going to try to do tonight. AJ, I haven't even asked you. Rockets, Lakers tonight. We getting 6 games, or does this end tonight?
I think we'll know by the end of the first quarter. I'm going to side with John today and have Rockets by 6.
You got the Rockets getting to a Game 6. I mean, I normally don't agree with John on anything. So that kind of informs people where I stand on this. To your point, if the Rockets are turning the Lakers over early and that trend continues and they don't get the added boost from Austin Reeves, and if we got a game after one, okay, I can see it. To be honest, I don't really expect the Lakers to jump out early. I just think there will be a tone set. And if they're, like, when I say early, I don't think they'll be up by double digits after one. But if they're making shots early, that might inform my opinion about the rest of the game. And if they take care of the basketball. I think that, beyond shooting the ball, because sometimes shots are just going to go down. If the Lakers are taking care of the basketball early, even if it is a close game, that would be an indicator to me that this one, they're locked in on. They know how important a Game 5 win is. So they don't have to extend this series with OKC waiting in the wings. That'll inform me. If the Lakers are careless and the Rockets are forcing turnovers, then I might agree with you that at a minimum we got a game in the fourth quarter. But if they can't turn them over, I don't know how the Rockets are going to score consistently enough if they're not doing that. So that might actually lead to a big first quarter deficit, because runouts, fast break points, and offensive rebounding is their formula for success, and a third of that formula is forcing, as far as the runouts are concerned, is forcing turnover. So I'm going to go Lakers close this one out. I'd love to be pleasantly surprised and talk about this young team as it's built right now without all the older players showing what they're capable of and pushing a Lakers team. That would be a major, even if it ends in 6 or 7 in the Lakers' favor, a major compliment to these young players if they find a way to not allow that killer crushing loss in Game 3 to shake them up, and they find a way to continue to win games. Pre-game yesterday, after practice, they certainly felt like a team who, or at least they were expressing like a team who believes they still can win this series. Now they got to go out and win one in L.A. where they have not looked good in this series. All right. We'll go to break. So far through 2 shows, almost five hours of the broadcast day, it's split evenly. Lance and I got this series ending tonight. AJ and John have it ending in, at least not ending tonight. Do you feel a little dirty, AJ, agreeing with the guy who always kills you about your Cowboy stuff?
Oh, I meant to say something about that, but I meant to say thank you for Caleb.
Well, you can thank me for that, but okay. I'm talking about John. And his willingness to kill you every time a Cowboys topic comes up. But, yeah, AJ, right before the day of the draft, he was filling in, and I think that was Thursday you were here last
week.
Either way, we were talking about the draft, and I think we were discussing, because we were back-to-back in picks, Dolphins and Cowboys, and he said, hey, I want Caleb Downs. And I was like, you know what? I didn't think they're going to take a safety because of all the talk about the Dolphins wanting to – emphasize size. Now, that was really about the trenches. They didn't always draft the biggest player, but I didn't think Caleb Downs was in the cards for the Dolphins. The question would be whether he was taken before the Cowboys pick. Turns out those two teams made a trade. At 11, the Cowboys gave up a couple fifth-rounders, so AJ got his guy. A lot of people think Caleb Downs is a future Hall of Famer, particularly because of the way he thinks about the game and how informed he is, where he knows plays before they even happen. So the Cowboys certainly, at least in AJ's mind, got the guy. So we'll see how it plays out as the Dolphins drafted a tackle who they've already said is going to play guard. So certainly not a great history of drafting offensive linemen, but Kaden Proctor was their pick, and the GM, who is from the Packers, and they have a history of drafting well at the offensive line position, says freak of nature kind of Kaden Proctor, and he'll start his career next to the Houston product, Patrick Paul. Patrick Paul will play left tackle. He's established himself there, and Kaden Proctor's going to start at left guard for the Dolphins if they have their way. So you have two giant human beings on the left side, and then you'll have one of the smaller centers in the NFL, and Aaron Brewer, right beside Kaden Proctor. So I'm glad that AJ got his guy, at least a little happiness from the draft there. All right, we'll go to break. We got one more second to go before we wrap it up here at Sterling Country Club. It'll be Rich Eisen after us, and then Sean's filling in for Joe with Jeremy at 3. But one more segment, we will be back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at Sterling Country Club for the occasional invitational. Here's Del Olalea.
We are actually less than a month. We're less than a month from when March Madness ended. And there are going to be some significant changes. It looks like we're getting ever closer to the tournament expanding again, this time to 76 teams. Now, in the article on ESPN, it is said by the people who want this expansion, it's not about money. Now, they are meeting with their broadcast partners to figure out how this extra inventory is going to be distributed, but this is about a push from the power conferences getting more access, more at larges. We know that there are teams that get in who aren't very good, at least in terms of their chances of winning the title, because they're from a smaller conference with the automatic bids. So the power conferences, who have all the advantages, have decided they would like more. So Auburn, from this past year, who had their former coach stumping for them, happens to be that he set it up so his own son could take over. Now maybe we don't have to hear Bruce Pearl stump for a very average Auburn team, because there are now going to be more at-larges for power conference teams to get in. So that is one benefit. If Auburn's 16-14 again, I don't have to listen to Bruce Pearl for 2 weeks talk about how his basketball team should get in over, what was it, Miami of Ohio. That was his big issue, because Miami of Ohio didn't play in a great conference and have a great out of conference schedule, and he thought Auburn simply existing and playing the SEC was enough to get them in. Thankfully, they didn't get in because they didn't have a shot to win. And Miami of Ohio, at least for the common person, was a better story, considering where they came from and how many games they won. I think they were – then they get to like 30-plus games in a row before their streak ended. They were that type of dominant team, even if it was against lesser competition. So now we're going to move to 76. So if you're a fan of a perennial bubble team, now a better chance of your team getting in. And I'll probably pretend for a little bit like it's going to matter that much to me that there are now 8 extra teams. But at the end of the day, whatever. I mean, I'll either watch a play-in game or not. If there are more teams in Dayton for the play-in, cool. If they want to put it someplace else, I'll decide on the day whether I care about this. Let's just say, as far as at-large is concerned, the last two at-large is playing each other for a chance to get into the big tournament. My focus generally begins on Thursday at about 11:15 once the 64 field team gets going. But hey, if it happens in 2028 and we've got more basketball to watch at this time of the year, at least around the end of March and into April, I'll be fine. I mean, people are upset now, but we all get over things because change always happens. And we know money plays a huge factor, despite some of the talk about it being more about just at large teams, more at large teams coming from power conferences. I guess I'd think of it this way: if you're a coach, who let's say you coach in the SEC and you coach at Mississippi State, and you're not coaching at a place where it's championship or bust, but they would like to see their team make the tournament every once out of 3 years, this is good for you, where you can keep your job because maybe every 3 years or so you get a good transfer portal class and they can help you be the 12th best team in the SEC, and that gets you a spot in the tournament. No chance to win anything. We all know you're a pretty average basketball team, but at least you're not left out. The problem for you is, in this hypothetical, if there are now 76 teams and you don't make it, then there's going to be less patience for you. But I don't. It falls in the category of CYA, and also, hey, if you're going to give me a chance to make it, I'll take it. So we'll see. We're going to see. If you think the bubble is soft now, it's going to get even softer in maybe the next couple of years. That wraps it up for us. We're done. At least I'm done. We will, at least the local side, will take a break for about 3 hours. And then it'll be Sean and Joe from 3 to 6 here at Sterling Country Club, part of our occasional invitational benefiting kids' meals. John, thankfully, didn't come in from around and bother me. Maybe he'll save that for Sean and Jeremy. We will see about that. But all his promises, he broke them, thankfully for me. All right. Thank you, AJ, for filling in. And since we're done for the day, AJ, what does that mean?
I don't know how to answer that.
Well, appropriate. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.